Later this week in Dearborn, doctors, psychologists, social workers, and religious leaders from around the world will gather for the 6th annual Muslim Mental Health Conference. And Current State's Joe Lindstroth is here to tell us more. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Mark. According to Dr. Farha Abbasi, she's a assistant professor of psychiatry here at MSU and a founder of the Muslim Mental Health Conference, this is one of the very few opportunities, if not the only one in the world, for mental health professionals and religious leaders to gather and discuss ways to address mental illness in Muslim communities around the globe. And one successful program that emerged a few years ago is what's called a mental health first aid training program for imams. Now, imams are often the first person outside the family that many devout Muslims turn to when they're struggling to help a relative who may be suffering from a mental illness. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to learn more about the training program, and I spoke with Dr. Abbasi and Imam Ali Suleiman Ali. He's the director of Muslim Family Services in Detroit. Imam Ali went through the training program a few years ago. We started by talking about one of the Boston Marathon bombers, Tamerlan Tsarnaev. Dr. Abbasi points out that most discussions about his involvement focus on his religion and miss a crucial fact. He was likely suffering from a severe mental illness.
Boston Globe did a 5-month investigation into the Tsarnaev family, and it turns out that Tamerlan, since young age, was hearing voices, which is very typical of psychosis. What we hear, say, is commands, like he was hearing two voices in his head, which were telling him to do things, act on it. And this, it seems he had mentioned it to friends a lot of time, to the people he was praying with. And he did go to the mother, which it seems just directed him back to the imams and did not take him for treatment.
Does the way his mother reacted to Tamerlan's behavior surprise you?
No, actually it doesn't, because of the stigma and the fact that she thought this is her prodigal son, the son, the oldest in the family. It's very interesting that she and her husband were in psychiatric care for PTSD-like symptoms, but she still did not prefer to take Tamerlan to a psychiatrist. Instead, told him to go and pray for his health, which is a big issue that I see in the community.
You mentioned stigmas. What are some of the stigmas surrounding mental illness in many Muslim communities?
I think basically it's not only the Muslim community specifically. Generally, we run into the stigma around mental illness. There is some shame kind of associated. There is this thought process that this is something which is in your control that should be averted. And in Muslim community especially, or religious faith-based communities, I see they think of this as a spiritual weakness.
Imam Ali, how is mental illness typically viewed by the people that you work with at Muslim Family Services?
Well, when people usually come to us here for marital problems, but when they come, sometimes we realize this individual, he has some mental problem because of he's off on the topic, and he's not consistent in his what he's talking about, and the movements and everything. Then we realize that he has some mental problem, and then we will send him to one of our psychiatrists to assess him.
And Dr. Abbasi just mentioned that it's seen by many as a spiritual weakness. Can you expand on that from your point of view, Imam Ali?
Spiritual weakness?
Yes. There's this concept called jinn, J-I-N-N.
Yes.
Talk about that.
That, absolutely. And jinn issue is a big problem in the Muslim community. Even today, I receive one call saying that whenever the people come and ask the hands of my daughter if things will going well, and then at the end, then everything breaks, okay? So they believe that they have been either affected by jinn or somebody used magic to that
evil eye
in an individual. this is a big problem in our community. But what I see, many of these things, I believe that is an mental issue. Okay? Like she told me, her and her mother, when they enter into the house, they see the roof shaking, and they hear some voices. That means there's a jinn in them, jinn possess the girl. Okay, what I will do, I don't ignore what they are saying, or I don't, and they say, no, this is not a jinn, you have to see psychiatric. I would tell them, first of all, let us take two different steps. One, we recite some verses from the Quran, and then we will send them to the psychiatric. If you do that, it's more acceptable than sending them directly to see a psychiatric.
So thank you so much, Imam, for bringing that important point up, because when I say spiritual weakness, this is what I'm talking about, is that the mental illness is thought to be something like a supernatural happening. So it's either somebody has put an evil eye on you, or you are possessed by jinn. So being a cultural psychiatrist and having the religious background, I completely will do this similar thing. Like, I would send them to an imam to pray and take care of that aspect, and then make sure that it's not psychosis.
What is the typical process, Dr. Abbasi, for a family with traditional Muslim values that they would go through if a relative were to display the symptoms of mental illness?
I think the hierarchical structure is that the first thing you would do is go to your elders in the family, most probably your parents. And then the second definitely is imam or sheikh or someone who's considered knowledgeable and respected in the community. And so they would invariably go to Islamic Center, would be the second place. Then if they are having a lot of symptoms, they like to use more physical symptomatology and somatization, end up in primary care settings. So it's very rare that they would see a psychiatrist. And that is the goal, is to change that dynamics.
And hence the reason for the mental health first aid training program that you've helped develop for imams. Tell me about what you've been doing on that front.
So basically, keeping this hierarchical structure in mind, the idea was, how do we bridge the gap? Like, Imam Ali is one of the very aware and educated person. He understands the importance of where it's important to bring in a psychiatrist, or the importance of treatment. So we need to bridge this gap between the clergy and the providers. And that is the goal of first aid mental health.
What has been the interest among imams in this program? How long have you been doing this program?
This has been going on for the last 5 to 6 years. And I see the interest growing every year. So this year we have the endorsement of all the leading imams in Michigan. We have the endorsement of Islamic scholars of North America. We have chaplaincy endorsement.
And Imam Ali, you participated in the training a few years ago. Did you find it helpful?
Very, very helpful. And I found it helpful, and helpful how to deal with the individuals when they come to you in the manner that they will trust you. They will trust you to reveal everything to you. I think one of the workshops they did in Lansing, I think 3-4 years ago, and the way you ask the question, the individual, you have to show him first you are concerned about him, you love him, and this is going to be a confidential, and so on. So, and I think, and there are many imam also who attended and like it. But what I would like to suggest to Dr. Abbasi is, we have some imams, they are dealing with the people that presumably that are affected by a jinn. Some individuals and the imams who deal with that directly, I would like to invite them to come and talk to us, and how they diagnose someone that has been affected by gene, how they know that? Because I believe most of the people, they have a mental problem,
Dr. Abbasi, what would you recommend that imams do when someone presents with jinn?
I would like to also comment on one other thing, Joe, is like this is exactly what I'm talking about. As we are doing this more and every year, we are bringing in newer topics and newer people to present, and we are realizing what other issues are prevalent in the community. So we started with very broad issues like domestic violence and how youths are struggling with their identity and integration into a newer culture, and how the woman rights, and now substance abuse, and now we are going into more specific topics. Like this year, Imam Ali, we have an imam traveling all the way who is gonna talk about his experience in a prison system, because we are seeing a high rate of conversion to Islam in these prison population, and he's gonna talk about the issues prevalent in that population. So this is an ongoing thing, but just somebody possessed, I think Imam Ali said, that the imams having the training to identify the symptoms of psychosis and to differentiate where it is a cultural belief, which is, like he said, it is mentioned in the holy book, so it is there, but we don't know what jinn, presence of jinn means, what's the possession, what does that mean? So making sure it's the differentiate between psychosis versus possession. And just one important point is, because it's the interesting, when you have an episode of psychosis, religious delusions are very common. So it's prevalent, again, in other religion, faith-based communities. We would see that if you are coming from a religious background, religious delusions are the most common that you see in psychosis. So coming back to Tamerlan, I just wanted to make sure to touch on one important thing. As a provider, as a psychiatrist, I'm always wonder, like, if this tragedy could be prevented if Tamerlan had gotten timely treatment for his mental health issues.
You're listening to Current State on WKAR. I'm Joe Lindstroth, and I'm discussing issues surrounding mental health in the Muslim community with Imam Ali Suleiman Ali, Director of Muslim Family Services in Detroit, and Dr. Farah Abbasi. She's an MSU Assistant Professor of Psychiatry and the founder of the Muslim Mental Health Conference, which is later this month. Imam Ali, do you find that the people you are working with, are they receptive to mental health treatment when it comes from you?
Yes, usually they go. Because, first of all, we make some spiritual things to them. Because if they, at the very beginning, you tell them it's a mental problem, they are not going to go. Okay? We say we do both. We do spiritual and scientific things.
How big of a problem is mental illness in the communities that you work with there in Detroit, Imam Ali?
Well, it's a real. We and I have them. I can't put some figures or numbers on the percentage. But if I have to say something, maybe up to 10 to 15%.
Does this mirror what you're seeing, Dr. Abbasi?
I would say a little higher rate. I'm seeing, but of course, I'm seeing a student population, and we see more people who are more open and more aware and more accepting. But definitely, we have to realize this is a newer community, that the emphasis on the mental health is new. We still don't have enough research and exact numbers. But recently, the few studies that have been done in this population are showing higher rate of depression. So there is one that Pew Research did, which showed that Muslim youth are more compromised and have more rate of depression than other religious groups. And then there is one which is showing high rate of depression in Arab population. So we have to keep ethnicity versus religion in mind.
Do you have any ideas as to why that might be? Was there any insight within the study that explained some of that or through your experience?
Definitely immigration, I think, is a big source of trauma. And there are studies done in other populations show that the depression rates are higher in second generation immigrant population. Beside that, of course, we recently know the effect of 9/11. We have seen post 9/11 higher rate of post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, and depression in Muslim population.
Because of Islamophobia?
Definitely Islamophobia, and just the stress and the high super focus on the community. It seems like sometimes the media focuses on the religion, especially if it's someone like from the Muslim community, the religion somehow becomes more important than the mental illness or the fact that the violence and the untreated mental illness. So I think that in itself put a lot of pressure. But beside that, acculturation, beside that, the issue of having bicultural identity. So how are we navigating that for our youth is going to become an important issue.
Now, at the end of this month, from April 24th to 26th, you'll be holding your sixth annual Muslim Mental Health Conference in Dearborn. What will be the focus this year?
So there are three goals with it. First part is imams training. Second day, we have latest research being presented. And then the third day, it's we are holding a panel on state of Muslim mental health. So we are identifying the goals and where should we, all the Muslim providers in the state and from outside the state are coming together to have a very definite goal, like where should we take it? What should be the next step?
This is the sixth annual. Have you seen changes? Is word spreading?
Oh, this year we have people coming all the way from Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Australia, Pakistan. So this has been an amazing experience. This still is the only conference of its kind. And it's a great networking collaboration point for all of us to come together. I'm just really very enthused and very excited about it.
And when you say the only one of its kind in the world, in the U.S.?
The last I checked, almost in the world, I would say, but definitely in the U.S.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss mental health issues in the Muslim community. Imam Ali Suleiman Ali is director of the Muslim Family Services in Detroit, and Dr. Farah Abbasi is an MSU assistant professor of psychiatry and founder of the Muslim Mental Health Conference, which is later this month. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And
thank you, Imam. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Farah.